Somewhere in Hell's Kitchen, there's a lawyer named Matt Murdock.
And he works with his friend Foggy and a woman whose name Karen.
At a law firm called Nelson and Murdock, where they help people find justice.
But Matt's got a secret at night, he becomes a vigilante.
Even though he's blind, he's got these super senses and the training
to beat up the nasty bad guys who are ruining Hell's Kitchen.
Matt, he loves his home so much that he puts on his armor costume
and pretends that he's the devil as he smashes in their faces.
He's called Daredevil.
He is Daredevil.
Also, there's a guy named Frank who's shooting people. That guy's crazy.
And then Matt's old flammer Electro chases up from out of nowhere.
Welcome to the Defenders podcast, the fan podcast about the Marvel Netflix series. I'm Claire.
I'm Mel.
I'm Matt.
And I'm Robin.
Oh, wow.
Ethel Merman.
Is that you? And rising like, being resurrected like a ninja previously burnt to death, coming back to the podcast like a resurrected Peter Shinkoda. It's our previous guest, Tammy! Yay! Yay! Woo! The troublesome Tammy, I should say.
What'd she do?
She hasn't done it yet, Matt. She hasn't done it yet. Ooh. Hello, Tammy.
Hello.
Hello. So, I have to ask you, as is our way, what is your knowledge of season 2 of Daredevil? Oh, I know, but the listeners don't.
I know everything.
And I believe I actually messaged you about this episode, I think, when I watched it, or when you were watching it. Or I basically messaged you that
probably.
I was excited that Wilson Fisk was back.
Yes. Oh, no, you know what it was? I had watched not the last episode, but the episode before where the ending was just this big hole.
Yeah.
And you messaged me thinking I was watching the one where the ending was Wilson Fisk, and you were like, oh, the ending is so amazing. So I watched this episode and I'm like, what's so amazing about this big hole? I don't know what I'm supposed to know about this hole. But no, it was that Wilson Fisk was back, and I was very excited. And I am so happy to get this episode because I got a really crappy episode for season one. So this is amazing.
Do you remember which one it was?
It was one. Robin, I want to say you even gave that episode in season one like a 4 or something. You gave it all the episodes good scores, and then the one I was on, you gave it a very low score because it was really crappy.
The ones we leave behind.
It was just
The penultimate episode.
Yeah, and it was terrible for a penultimate episode. Sorry, it just was. It just was.
I don't remember why, but yeah.
Well, Robin was angry for that one because that's when Ben Urich died.
Yeah,
Ben Urich died.
And then it was like also like the third episode where Foggy, Karen, and Matt were just like, meh, with each other, meh, whatever. And it was just so stupid and nothing was moving along. So, yeah, now I got a really awesome episode. So
I'd like to say it was on purpose, but we do it randomly, so. Because I never know what's going to happen in any episodes before I dish them out. Cool. Well, I have a little bit of news this week. One bit of news is about the Black Panther movie. Michael B. Jordan has been cast as possibly the villain. Michael B. Jordan, obviously, in Creed and Fruitvale Station and the Fanforstic movie as Human Torch. So apparently, if you want to become part of Marvel, people have joked, you know, play the Human Torch and then you'll get cast, because obviously Chris Evans was also the Human Torch before he joined the MCU. But that's cool casting. He's a really good actor, so I'm excited about that. Yeah, it's going to be very cool.
I love
cool.
both those movies, too. I'm excited.
Fanforstic and...
Fanforstic. Yeah.
No, apparently, they've also
Creed
announced
that.
Oh, Creed is so good. Apparently, they've also announced that there might still be a possibility of Fanforstic 2, which I fell to my knees and went, no! At the heavens. Because I don't understand.
Fool me once, I'll probably still go see the sequel.
Sony.
I definitely will, because I hate and love bad, terrible movies. I love them and hate them all at the same time. I won't go see it in the theater.
Yeah.
But I will watch it.
So Sony has Spider-Man and Fantastic Four, right?
No, Fox has Fantastic Four.
Oh, okay.
They have X-Men and Fantastic Four because they, around the time that Fantastic Four was going to come out, they did this big photo shoot of all the actors from in their sort of movie universe just in their usual clothes, and it was all the actors from like X-Men, and then they had like the guys from Fantastic as well. I refuse to call it Fantastic Four, and they had this big photo shoot thing. And then after the film came out and obviously bombed, and Deadpool was done really well, they had that same photo shoot, or they it was published in something else, but they've replaced the Fantastic actors with the Deadpool actors because they're like, yeah, because that film actually did well, so. They've kind of brushed that movie under the carpet as part of their cinematic universe.
Yeah. Well, I was hoping that Sony owned them and they could give the Fantastic Four the same deal they gave Spider-Man.
No. Well, I don't know. Fingers crossed. Apparently, the actress Alexandra Shipp, I think her name is, who's playing Storm in X-Men Apocalypse, has very outspokenly said, you know, she would love to appear in the Black Panther movie. Because in the comics, the sort of one of the big loves of Black Panther's life or his relationship is with the with Storm from the X-Men. But I don't think there's that kind of deal in the future. Although X-Men Apocalypse hasn't had great reviews, which is a shame. It's had very, very mixed reactions from critics. I've not seen it yet, but that might affect what they think going ahead. We'll have to see, because I think they were expecting it to be as successful as Days of Future Past, which it might still be money-wise, but the reviews haven't been as favourable. Hmm. We'll see.
I don't care. I'll still see it.
You're like, yay, mutants!
And we can call them mutants. Yay!
Yay, not Inhumans.
Are we going to talk about... our dearly departed.
Oh, we'll go on to that in a sec. I just have one more bit of Black Panther news, which is and I'm totally going to get her surname wrong, Lupita Nyong'o? Is that how you say it? Lupita Nyong'o?
Nailed it.
Nyong'o.
Nyong'o, okay, cool. Who we last saw or heard in Star Wars The Force Awakens. She is in talks to star as the female lead in the Black Panther movie, which is very exciting, so...
It's just going to be the girlfriend.
I hope not. I even hope, like, female lead, they haven't said love interest. It would be awesome if she's playing Shari, I think her name is, his sister. I don't know that much about Black Panther because she's, like, an awesome character in her own right. And they could do some really cool stuff without having to throw in, you know, a love story. But I don't know. She's apparently in talks. It's nothing's definite. But, I mean, if she gets cast, so we have Michael B. Jordan, we've also obviously got Chadwick as Black Panther, Lupita, and Andy Serkis possibly returning as his role that he was in Age of Ultron. That is an amazing cast, so I really hope she becomes part of it. Last bit of news. Go on, Robin.
Oh, God. You know, we went to... Oh, man. Can I spoil the thing that's related in Civil War? Is that okay at this point? Has everybody seen Civil War?
I guess so.
I just saw it last night, finally.
It's mild. Oh, you have to tell us what you thought. It's mild spoilers for Civil War.
I mean, if you've seen Winter Soldier, you know that Peggy Carter was kind of on her way out, and in Civil War, she passed away. And it was really sad for me, that one part in Civil War, when I saw it, because I knew that Agent Carter... The show was hanging in the balance at ABC, whether it was going to be picked up or not. And then, like, days later after I saw Civil War, it was like the Red Wedding at ABC. They canceled all sorts of stuff, including Agent Carter. So, and I so sad. Haley even posted on Facebook. She's like, goodbye, Agent Carter, and a little teary face. I was like, no.
So the last we saw of Peggy Carter on screen is her funeral, which is really sad.
Yeah.
Because there's all those years between then and now. And will we ever find out who her husband was? I think it was Susan.
I really want... Yeah, that makes the most sense. Yeah.
I have no idea how they could continue her story in the MCU or if they're just going to kind of let it go. But it's like, it's so weird. I was thinking about it today. I was like, this is actually the first failure of the MCU. This didn't get picked up because the ratings are so terrible. You know, the mainstream audience wasn't into it. So it's so weird.
Yeah, I'm gutted because I, as I said, I preferred it to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but that's just me. But it's very sad.
I preferred it to a lot of things. It was so good.
Preferred it to Supernatural.
Exactly. I'm like, but I watch a lot of shitty TV, so I guess that doesn't count.
So, Tammy, what was your quick thoughts on Civil War, let's say?
I enjoyed it. Lots of story and not as much action as I would have liked, but mm-hmm. It was good. I think it's a really good setup for Black Panther. I really liked Ant-Man. I really liked Spider-Man. So yeah, that was it. and Peggy Carter dying was sad. Her little funeral scene was sad.
Yeah. And seeing Steve Rogers sad just always makes me sad. Sad Steve Rogers. I'm like,
Natasha showed up. Oh my God. so beautiful.
Rogers loved it. Tears. Like, I had to cope in the same week with the death of Peggy Carter and Krycek in The X-Files. It was a hard week. My emotions were all over the place.
that was a long time coming.
For more details on that, listen to the other podcast on Infotex. It was a sad, sad week.
Skinner gets it next week. Anyway.
I don't mind. Skinner's a sad sack these days.
He's in the credits now. What? Okay, we'll talk about that later.
Guys turned on Skinner already? Oh my God. Who's left?
So, let's get to the episode. Yes. This week's episode is episode 9, 7 Minutes in Heaven, written by showrunner Marco Ramirez and Lauren Schmidt-Hisrich, directed by Steven Sergic, who has directed episodes of all 3 seasons we've covered so far, which is cool. And the first scene we get is a little kind of flashback. We see what happened immediately after the finale in Daredevil Season 1. Kingpin is escorted into jail right after his arrest, and then later we see him talking to his lawyer, Donovan, and he also gets a visit from Dutton and starts plotting plans, I guess, to take over again. My first thought was, when he enters and that, like, he's taking all his clothes off and stuff, he was so tall. I was like, did they just hire like really short actors to play the other guards? Because he was looming over them. I know he's a tall guy, but I was like, oh, he looks so big.
I missed Fisk so much, and I didn't realize how much until I started watching him, and I'm like, I love him so much.
I just liked how he looked like he was going to cry.
Yeah.
Yeah, to give up his fine clothes and the cufflinks.
Yeah, I like the focus on the
cufflinks. Yeah, and also the way they focused on the cufflinks, because, like, obviously this is straight after last season, and it reminded me, and I was like, oh yeah, those are the cufflinks that Vanessa picked out for him, because they're not his dad's ones. Because remember at the start, that was like the last time he did his little ritual, but it was different because he was with Vanessa and she picked those cufflinks for him. So with him kind of dropping them, it was kind of him like giving up Vanessa almost. I thought it was really good. I liked that.
Vanessa.
Also, whenever there's someone's given a prison number, his prison number was 55467. All I can think of is 24601. I just want that to be the number.
Anybody who plays Quiz Up, I do Daredevil questions for that app, and it's multiple choice. And one of the questions was, "What was Fisk's prison number?" And yeah, one of the wrong answers is 24601.
Just imagine a Daredevil musical with like Fisk singing, but Fisk played by Vincent D'Onofrio. Oh, it'd be so good.
I am the Phantom of Hell's Kitchen.
Well, Dutton tells him that he's no longer the Kingpin, because what does he say? I'm the Kingpin of this bitch. Sorry if that's an answer. That just made me laugh so hard. Oh, so good. So yeah, he starts like making his plans for the outside, and this is how he gets the message to Punisher. But it's kind of cool that he he goes, his plan is getting information on everyone. You know, it's not physical, it's not intimidation physically, it's getting all this information and actually like helping people on the outside to get him to his side. I thought that was a clever way of them doing it rather than him just going in and, you know, being like, oi, be on my gang or I'll squish your head.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's part of, like he talks about later, that's his long con. He's just he really is just trying to keep his head down, so when he gets out, it's legit. He is out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Yeah.
Smart.
I love it. And it's a really long opening scene. Like, I was watching it, and I was like, oh, we haven't had the credits yet. Like, it went on for a while. But after the credits, Elektra tends Matt's poisoned wound and cleans the apartment, and then Matt confronts her in regards to killing the little ninja kid.
It just looks funny, her, like, pouring the bleach and stuff. I'm helping.
Yeah. I like that Matt's kind of, like, it, well, I don't know what you guys think, Matt and Mel. Like, with the sort of muffled, because it's said in the subtitles, muffled screaming, and when you've got the camera going weird with Matt and these weird sound effects, it reminded me of, like, David Lynch. Like, the muffled screaming was very Twin Peaks to me.
Yeah. I can see that.
I thought it was cool. It was like, and Matt looks like he's tripping balls.
Mm-hmm.
He's sort of getting out of consciousness. Yeah. And he's got a little cleaning crew as well.
And so begins the firings of Matt firing people from his life.
You're fired. Matt's going to take over on The Apprentice.
But yeah. I love it. I love the whole, like, you know, you know, I realize that you are who you are and I am who I am. And that just is not going to mix. So we might as well just part ways. And fucking the hand is mine. I'm going to take those assholes out by myself if I have to.
Which is interesting because he says something like, I have to fight this war alone. And I thought it's interesting that they're going this way with Matt in season two. And I wonder how it's going to set up his character for the Defenders, because that's the next time we'll see him. Obviously, after this season, we've still got him in this season. But I'm assuming in that he works out that he has to be part of a team, that he can't do it all alone, and gets help. So I just think it's interesting that at this point he's so like, oh, I have to be alone. But he's going to eventually become part of this little team.
Yeah, I kind of just, like, he wants to be alone because he is hurt himself and he's hurting everyone around him because he doesn't know how to handle, like, what he's doing. And he doesn't know how to balance the two, I don't want to say two versions of himself because I kind of don't like the way they split it like that. Mm-hmm. But that is kind of what it is. It's like these two parts of himself, he doesn't know how to balance that. And so it's kind of one or the other for him. And he's just giving in to the Daredevil, I guess.
He says, like, it's Foggy as well. Like, because doesn't Foggy say something like, oh, but Foggy says something like, he wasn't always, you know, you used to be my best friend or whatever, or that not just the vigilante.
Yeah.
I say something like, oh, no, it always was that way. You know, he always was that person.
Except he tried to not be that person. So
yeah. Yeah, exactly. He tried not to be, but I think that's part of it.
Yeah.
Because it obviously shows when he was with Elektra.
Mm-hmm.
I had a weird note as well for this scene in that there's all the jars on Matt's kitchen unit. And I really thought that he had post-its all over the jars. And I was like, why are there post-its on the jars? Like, that's weird. And then there was a shot that was closer and I realized they were Braille tags. But I wrote in my notes, why has Matt put post-its or Elektra on the jars? But they're actually like little Braille tags, but they're different colours for some reason. Like saying spaghetti, pasta, whatever. What did you guys think of Elektra in this scene?
I didn't feel bad for her.
Oh, but you know.
I never feel bad. You feel bad for her?
She enjoys killing. No.
But I mean, I feel.
Do you feel sad
I for feel,
her?
I feel more bad for the Punisher. And he enjoys killing, but he kills for a reason. She just kills for no reason because she likes it.
Yeah. Well, he says,
you know,
like, your adrenaline's
just like killing, Matt. Whatever.
See, that's what
judge.
That's why Tammy's the troublesome Tammy. Just
like, yeah, now we yeah, I know you guys, well, I haven't listened to your last episode, but I know you guys are not feeling Elektra. I liked Elektra, but I fucking hate Jennifer Garner with a fiery passion, so
it's okay, so we can all be wrong in things.
Whatever. I just want to, like, there's people that I just want to punch their face just to punch their face because their face is just punchable, and she's just one of those people. But so I really like this Elektra. But yeah, I don't know if I felt bad for her. I felt bad that she always feels like she's got to apologize to Matt. That's terrible. There's no reason she should apologize to him at all. She did feel threatened, and she did kill that little teenage ninja kid because he was going to go back and tell his, like, what'd she say? It's like big brothers or something.
Yeah.
And that is what was going to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Matt's stupid because he just, he keeps saying, oh, I'm going to, you know, I don't want to kill people. He kills people all the time. He thinks he's just hurting them, but I'm sure that a lot of these people are dead. In a lot of these episodes, like, there's no way they survived that fight.
He's like, I didn't kill him. I just put him in a lifelong coma, but he's alive. I just dropped a fire hydrant on his head. Fire extinguisher.
At the very least, they have like injuries they have to live with for the rest of their lives.
I wish I was dead.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess, like I said, I don't feel bad for her. I just don't like that she feels the need to apologize to him in any way, shape, or form, because she shouldn't. And that's really irritating.
Well, meanwhile, in prison. Oh, go on. Oh, sorry.
Suppose that's what this episode is kind of about. It's like, accept me for who I am. Like, even Matt says that at the end, accept me for who I am. Just leave, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Oh, sorry. I'm just thinking about things coming up, and I just had a little moment of... Sorry.
Damn it.
It's a scene next week. I think Tammy knows which one I mean. Do you know, Tammy? Wink, wink. Anyway. I haven't got my bell.
The head, I didn't realize.
So, in prison, Fisk and Frank, as I call them in my notes, F and F, are talking in prison about Nelson and Murdoch, and then Fisk offers Frank closure on his family by killing Dutton, because Fisk has got some info on Dutton. At this point, because I was confused the first time I watched this, I thought that Fisk was making up the fact that Dutton had anything to do with killing Frank's family and was just setting him up, was just like, oh, well, he's a drug dealer, so I could, you know, just kind of set him up and get Frank to kill him because I want him out of the way, which is still what Fisk does. But I thought that it was that he was kind of framing him for that. And I'd forgotten when I watched it this time. I was like, oh, no, he actually was there. But this did confuse me on my first watch.
Yeah, same here. I wasn't sure if it was a, you know, I think on this, my second watch, I was like, no, he doesn't actually, it's never doubted at all by anybody. So I'm assuming if there was any doubt, there would be somebody who would be, like, questioning it.
But. Dutton pretty much just straight away comes out with it. He's like, oh, yeah, I was there.
Like, why would he say that? Wouldn't he know what was coming?
Yeah.
Well, I guess because Dutton thinks he runs the place, so he's impenetrable. I don't know. He's an idiot.
I think everyone kind of underestimates Frank in this episode, even Fisk.
Yeah.
You know. I like the fact that we have Fisk mention that he's not a fan of Nelson and Murdoch, because we've only actually had Fisk interact with Matt, I think, the once. I don't think he's ever interacted with Foggy, but he interacted with Matt in the scene in season one where he went to the gallery. But obviously they were causing him issues with them sorting out the tenement block, and it was going up against what he wanted because he was getting that block for the Yakuza. But I like the fact that he obviously has beef with Daredevil because Daredevil put him away, but he also has beef with, without knowing it, with Matt's civilian identity as well, or Daredevil's civilian identity. And I quite like that.
He just doesn't like any part of him.
Yeah, he hates all of him. And Frank's face when Fisk mentions the massacre in the park kind of made me a bit sad, because he kind of has a sad face and you see his eyes kind of tear up a bit, and I was like, aw, I want to give you a hug, you big old murderer. Aw. Come here. And this is where we get the title, because Frank has a 7-minute window with Dutton. 7 minutes of heaven.
You should have given him a kiss before you killed him.
In the next scene, Foggy visits Matt to discuss the future of the firm. I want to know what you guys thought, because I know before you've said you don't like these two arguing.
I feel like Matt just wants to show off his scarred body to just about everyone. It's really annoying.
I was happy to see how maturely they were talking about it. It's like, you know, Matt could have been like, you know, strung him along and said, yeah, I give it a couple weeks or whatever. But Matt's like completely like, I know what I am. I know what I have to do and I know what I can't do. And that's, you know, just ignore this side of me to do what you would rather me do. So maybe it's probably a good idea if we just kind of end it right here.
And he's honest, so. And he says that he is getting in Foggy's way of practicing law, which he is, because Foggy, like, kicked ass in the courtroom without Matt's help, and Matt is getting in the way.
Sort of kicked ass.
Well, he did kick ass, seeing as he was very unprepared.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who are you again? Oh, you're my character witness, so tell me about your story. Oh, that's surprising.
It's just this scene just reminded me of the first time they broke up in the first season. I like that one better. There was man tears.
Oh, I know. There's so man tears. Although when Foggy walked away, Matt kind of had a few little man tears, but they didn't actually like plop down his face. They were just welling up.
There was like quivering voices in man tears.
There was. Matt's lip did a bit of quivering at the end of the scene. He's like, my Foggy's left me.
I think Foggy was like shocked that Matt, like kind of agreed with him. Like Foggy was trying to, I don't know if he was just trying to get him to apologize again or change what he was doing and thought that the threat was going to work. But yeah, he was pretty surprised.
Matt called his bluff.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good, because like you were saying, Robin, they dealt with this quite maturely, and I like the fact that it shows that their relationship has progressed from season one. Although it does hurt me to see the little avocados fighting. It makes me sad. I just want them to be little avocado bros. Oh,
avocabros.
Oh, they're so cute. So Karen arrives at Nelson and Murdoch and finds Foggy packing up, and she reveals more info on the John Doe who was at the crime scene that Tepper spoke about in court. And this is when Foggy says that he was his best self at the court covering for Matt, and Karen says she was as well. They were their best selves.
Hmm.
Matt's like, I don't agree.
What point is she trying to prove with this dead body that disappeared?
It's to say that there was some kind of cover-up, because the doctor was basically told, because remember he had the outburst in the court and was told to change stuff. So the fact that there is some kind of cover up, but the problem is,
so they have
no
idea of the nature of it, just that it happened.
Yeah, they just know that something's happening. Okay. There's some kind of conspiracy. But we find out later, obviously when she speaks to Ellison, the fact that the doctor's testimony never went public because it was struck from the record. Which obviously doesn't make things easier. But I love the fact that it's so obvious in the photos. It's like, he's dead man's there, dead man's not there. And Ellison later is even like, yeah, I get it. Like, it's not a spot the difference picture. Like, right there, it's obvious. It's not even at a different angle. And Karen says all she wants is the truth. And then I want Foggy to go, you can't handle the truth. So in the next scene, we see our old friend Stan again, who we saw obviously at the posh party with Matt and Elektra. And Daredevil attacks Stan's guards, who are, we find out, holding him hostage to get some information on the hand. And we find out all about the farm. What kind of farm did you think it was, Mel? Avocados?
I don't know.
Avocados. They're growing new lawyers.
Lawyers on trees.
I thought that's where lawyers came from. They grow on trees, right? Just like spaghetti.
Yep.
Gross.
Yeah, it's right next to that spaghetti tree is an avocado tree.
Oh, if they were spaghetti trees, they'd be the best trees ever. Oh, you just
kind of gross.
I liked it that you know, the flow of the conversation, you know, we had him on the ground. He was questioning him as soon as, like, it brought up, like, he had a son and he's actually kind of a victim here. He lets him up. And then, like, Stan mentioned something about the farm, and you could see Daredevil going, that sounds super sinister. I want that. I want to beat something now.
Of course, it's got, like, a sinister name. It's, like, The Farm. Well, I have to say,
what if they got there and it was just an actual farm? Oh, never mind. I guess I was wrong.
They just have sheep because the Yakuza like having woolly outfits.
Y'all in the mood for mutton?
Look, eggs are healthy for you. We just got loads of chickens. Although, of course, because I am on high alert for Easter eggs, as always, in these episodes, when he mentioned his son Daniel, my ears went, Iron Fist, because Iron Fist's civilian name is Danny Rand. Obviously, there's no way it is him, because, spoilers, it's not, and we see Daniel later, but, yeah, my little Easter egg detector kind of went, ding, 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 and then I was like, oh, no, that makes no sense.
Yeah, I also, like, flashback to, like, episode 2, and, you know, he went to this place just because of this one, you know, kid that was in trouble, you know? Remember when he saved little Robin back then?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, yes, this is exactly what he's looking for, just to mow down, like, a hallway full of dudes and save a kid. What he got is a little different than that.
Yeah. So there's some kind of drug operation going on at the farm, and Stan says that the hand isn't planning whatever they're going to do. They've already done it. So back at the New York Bulletin, Karen visits Ellison and shows him some info on that she has on John Doe, and he encourages her to pursue the story because she's shaking the right trees, the spaghetti trees. The lawyer trees. There was the whiteboard they passed as they went in, which I think I mentioned to you guys before, and I said some of the stories on it. The only one that I noticed that seemed to stick out this time, because there was a lot of ones like police shooting, fire, and all this, but one was mayor's wife stalks. So someone's stalking the mayor's wife. That just particularly because they mentioned the mayor later. I think. Yeah, they mentioned the mayor later, don't they? So that I was like, oh, and his wife's being stalked. That's quite a cool little detail.
Yeah, the mayor, like, fired the enemy, and then all of a sudden his wife started getting stalked.
I was looking at the list of reporters trying to find a name I recognized, but I didn't really.
Yeah, I didn't recognize any either, and they also didn't recognize any on the Easter eggs ones. Like, nobody had reported any. The only one... also, Dutton doesn't seem to be a name, but Fisk's lawyer is from the comics, but we'll get into that in Easter eggs later because there's a little bit on him. Meanwhile, speaking of Dutton, Frank arrives at cell 305 for his 7 minutes of heaven with Dutton, I've written. And I love that Dutton is just sitting out, just in plain view in the cell, just counting money. He just doesn't care. And also, following on from Moira's comment last week, I love that they're doing the consistency with Frank's makeup, that his bruises are, like, going more yellow and green. I like that. Good makeup job. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, meanwhile, Stan and Daredevil arrive at the farm. That's all I have for that scene. and Karen arrives to visit Tepper, the medical examiner, with Ellison to talk about Frank Castle. And this is where we get the mention of the mayor. And we also find a bit more about our John Doe, that he had a police call sign in his left shoe, which means he was an undercover cop. Do undercover cops really do that? That seems weird.
Keep something in their shoe that identifies them?
Yeah.
Probably like, some
murders in the line of duty, I suppose. They're undercover.
But he's like, they say he's like super deep undercover, or he's like deep undercover, so I would have thought that they wouldn't have that. But I don't know. Did they do that in Donnie Brasco?
Shoe.
No.
I don't
know. He's dealing with the Yakuza, he might have to take his shoes off. Oh. As per custom.
They only deal, they're the hand, they only deal with gloves. They were the foot, they take the shoes.
Yeah, if they were fighting the Ninja Turtles, you mean? Yeah.
When that scene started, I thought we were going to see that Tepper had already been killed. Because, like, they knocked on his door and talked to the door, and I was like, is this going to be one of those where they, like, open the door and he's just, like, dead in a chair watching TV?
I couldn't remember. I was really thinking, like, this second time I watched it, I was really convinced that they opened the door and he was hanging because he killed himself.
Yeah.
He kind of had his outburst in the court, and so he'd been, like, either killed, like, killed and framed to make it look like a suicide, or he'd killed himself. But I was like, oh, he's alive. I was quite surprised. As I said last week, I couldn't really remember what happened in this episode, and then it all came back to me in the next scene.
He's alive, and he gives up information so quickly.
Yeah.
Well, there was like not a lot of...
They're questioning him in the court, and they're like, oh, so yep. So about this. And he's like, okay, I admit it. I changed. Whoa, calm down, dude.
Well, he did say they'd have to substantiate it before, like, he's going to actually admit it, you know, in a court of law or anything like that.
Yeah.
Because that worked out so well before.
Or, like, go on record with the newspaper, yeah.
So, in the next scene, we go back to Frank and Dutton. Frank is asking Dutton about the Stanton Massacre. And he works his way through the cell block. Wow, this is a
brutal
scene. Wow.
It's so crazy. Everything is so crazy in this scene. He stabs a dude in his balls. Like,
yeah, my wife and I were like, no!
He's using, like, a stake, like a vampire slayer.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be awesome if they all were exploding into dust?
I know. He gets staked through his arm. He gets, like, a wooden stake through his arm and carries on fighting. I was like...
Going through the motions.
In all my time. Oh, it's so brutal.
But he also pokes a dude's eye out with his fingers, and that guy still keeps fighting.
Yeah, he does.
He stakes a guy through the head. Yeah. He hits, I've written some of them down, eye gouging. Someone gets a sort of cobbled together tomahawk to the head. I was like, wow. Oh, it's amazing. Like, this fight is so, I mean, it's the most brutal fight scene, obviously, we've had so far. It's so well done. Like, props to Steven Sergic, the director, but also, obviously, the fight team, like Philip Silvera. I don't know who the double for Frank Castle is. I have it written down somewhere, but like they do such a good job in this scene. It's amazing.
Anytime they get in a hallway, they make magic.
Exactly. If you're in Daredevil, never go down hallways.
And I wonder if it's an invention of the show that newbies have to wear white. Because, in normal prison, it seems like that would be really a way to single somebody out and get them killed pretty quickly. But in the show, it's a good way to make it look super bloody.
Well, also, I wonder that because it fits in nicely. Like, they're like, oh, newbies wear white. So it works to show the blood on Frank. But also, it was that nice nod we got at the end of last season of the Kingpin finally wearing his white suit. That he wears from the comics, so it kind of works both ways. I have no, I don't know how American prisons work. I've no idea. As far as I know, that they wear like those outfits with the little arrows on them that are grey and have like a ball and chain on their feet. I've no idea.
Orange is the new black, taught me that newbies wear. What is it?
Do tan?
They wear orange.
No.
Yeah.
I can't.
Kitchen wears tan, right?
Yeah, I can't.
No, everybody who's been there for a while wears tan.
Ah, okay.
Kingpin should star in White is the New Black.
He should. I'd love to see just
Kingpin. Yeah, hell of a title to get away with, though, you know?
Yeah.
You're asking what? Say what?
Yikes. We also find out in this scene that the man who organized the deal was named the Blacksmith, and he was getting pure heroin from the Middle East. Maybe from our friend of the show, Melanie Gao. Maybe. She likes her heroin, doesn't she?
She Middle Eastern?
Well, he said from the Middle East. That might be where she's set up now, maybe. I don't know. I'm just speculating. There's a really cool shot when the riot police arrive. Frank's lying on the floor just covered in blood, and the blood splatter from the guy, you know, it ran all over his face, has made like a bloody pair of wings behind his shoulders on the floor. It was really cool.
Just like my friend Daryl.
You guys didn't notice? Well, Mel noticed it. You say it.
Oh, yeah. When he was on the ground, he had a Punisher logo on his shirt that was made out of blood.
I didn't see that.
He had a bloody skull. Yeah, and then when he got up, it disappeared. But then when they dragged him later and he saw his reflection in the puddle, I don't know, it must have reappeared because he was like looking at himself all like curiously. But I didn't. It still looked like a big splorch to me.
So yeah, I really only noticed it when it was that. The shot above of him laying
amongst
the corpses.
I had to make Matt rewind because he didn't notice it either.
Oh, I didn't notice it until the reflection in the puddle because he looked at it curiously, which made me want to rewind.
I think it's because that last guy he killed landed face first on his chest.
Yeah, that's what happened. That guy landed and then he made a skull imprint for some odd reason.
You've just blown my mind, Mel, because I didn't even notice that. And I didn't even notice it in the puddle scene because all I was looking at was like how the little spot of blood was splashing in the puddle. I was like, oh, it's so pretty. I didn't even look at the reflection.
I love how the guards, like, they bring out the drumline section of the SWAT team.
Yeah.
Also, I didn't mention it earlier, but it looked like the shiv that Wilson Fisk gave the Punisher had a pineapple handle on it, but I'm not
sure. Yes, I do.
I caught this pineapple myself.
It made the whole fight seem kind of ridiculous to me.
Look, if you can have a horror film where someone gets stabbed with a corn on the cob, gets stabbed with a pineapple.
The shiv was actually like some as seen on TV pineapple like
coring tool.
Oh, amazing. You just carve it. That should have happened in Shawshank Redemption. Someone's carving a shiv out of a pineapple. They're like, hey, Red, can you get me a pineapple? Oh, I love it. Oh, dear. Sorry. So at the farm, some Japanese businessmen are attacked by Daredevil, who wants info on the farm. My favourite character in this scene is a shaky, nervous Japanese guy, the one with the white hair, because he's kind of holding out his gun and he's like shaking really badly and he's just like, ooh! I just loved him. He was so scared.
So, he didn't look comfortable with the gun.
He didn't look comfortable even when he heard that noise. He was just like,
immediately he was like, oh my god.
Yeah.
But with the white hair, he kind of looked like old boy, I thought. Of white hair, I loved him in this scene. We have this guy called Daredevil Akuma-san, and I was like, well, I'll leave that up to Matt to translate. I'm assuming it's like Devil Man.
Akuma means devil. If he said Akuma-san, it would mean Mr. Devil, I guess.
Hey, Mr. Devil.
Devil, sir?
It means demon, actually. I don't know if it's...
Isn't there a character in Street Fighter called Akuma?
Yes.
Yeah.
I like that he's so polite. He doesn't just call him Akuma. He's like... He doesn't just call him Devil. He calls him Mr. Devil.
That's Mr. Devil to you.
Akuma-sama. Akuma-sensei.
Akuma-matata.
And Matt can hear bubbling blood. Like, you can hear bubbling, and then he goes... What is that? And I was like, it sounds like soup.
Soup's ready.
Soup's ready. And then he's like, that's blood. I was like, ugh. And the whole rest of this episode, whenever I saw like the vats of blood, all I can think of when I see like tons of blood that's obviously been there a while is, it doesn't gross me out this blood, but I just think, oh, the smell, the metallic smell of like old coins that you get in blood. Ugh.
Well, do you think that he heard the bubbling, but then he thought it was blood because maybe he could smell the metallic...
Yeah, I guess that. Because he smelled, he's been able to smell blood before, hasn't he? Like when Claire popped her stitches, I think, in season one, and he was like, I can taste blood or whatever. I can taste copper. So he said, like, I can taste the copper in the air or something.
It's either that or he's heard blood boil before somehow.
When he's been angry, his blood has boiled and it goes.
And that's the sound that it makes.
Carl Weathers comes up the stairs. I'm making a stew down
here. I would love it if Matt's freaked out because he thinks it's bubbling blood, and then this guy is just like, hey, the soup's ready. I bought some nice bread. I bought a baguette. So here's my biggest what the hell moment in the episode, in the next scene, and I have to tell a little story about it as well. So Karen and Ellison are at the Bulletin discussing the sting operation, and Ellison just flat up gives Karen Ben's old office. So I want to say, first of all, why is this office still empty when everyone else is sitting in the Bulletin? Why does he give Karen Ben's old office? She's not a reporter. And I have to say,
now she is.
She's not a lawyer either.
There was an episode of the There was an episode of the Empire podcast, and they were chatting. It was a spoiler episode for Daredevil season two.
I have that one saved.
But yeah, it's I've only listened to half of it, but the guys on it were like chatting to the actors from Daredevil, and they were like. And they're obviously reporters because they report on like films and entertainment. They were like, yeah, it's not that easy. You don't just walk into like getting your own office. Getting your job. Like, and they said that was their main problem with season two. It's just, and here's an office, Karen. Here you go.
I know I've said this to you, Claire. I just feel like the whole Karen storyline is very forced this season.
Mm-hmm.
This whole thing about her being in the office and feeling bad because she should, because that was Ben's office, and I do blame her for killing Ben.
Yeah.
I just think it's so forced. Like, she all of a sudden is super researcher. I know she's researched in the past and she's done a lot of research, but now she's like super researcher. She can do everything, and I don't like it.
I think it's I think like this storyline, if there was more time, which it sounds funny because obviously it's a 13-hour show, you know, like series, but if there was more time to develop this, that her going into more of investigative journalism would make sense, but it's just that it's so quick.
Exactly.
All of a sudden it's like, oh, okay. Yeah, it's just too sudden. I think it suits her character because she is this person who doesn't give up. Sorry?
She's been going this way for many episodes now. I've commented many times before that she should just be a detective or a reporter or whatever. They've built up to this.
Oh, I just mean in terms of like literally 5 minutes before this, she was still working for Nelson and Murdoch, and now suddenly... You know, she's
got an office.
When
you got a hot scoop, when you got a hot scoop, you got to act fast.
What a scoop!
Working in those newspaper terms, Matt. Side job.
The most egregious part of this scene was the Pepto-Bismol on the desk.
Yes,
to go in the fridge. That's been there for months, probably.
Oh, gross! I noticed that as well. I was like, ooh, like whose is that? Ooh. So Ellison also presents this file on Karen that Ben was collecting, and I managed to get a bit of the writing in a screen cap. Do you want me to read it?
Yeah, me too. Okay, good.
Okay. So as much as I could. So the headline is "Mystery Accident Causes Teen Fatality." The news article to the left didn't look like it was news at all because it was going on about Jesus or something, and I was like, I don't know what that is. The one to the right seemed to be the same story, but all the writing I could get was a 16-year-old male died in a single car crash in Windler County, I think it was, on Friday, authorities said. The unsolved death of this young man is currently under investigation. According to a Vermont Highway Patrol report, the young man, Kevin Paxton Page of Fagan Corners, veered off the roadway while heading east on Vermont Route 12 from the Hill Road exit ramp off Interstate 9, I think it was, I put question mark, for an unknown reason. 90. Pages, oh, was it 90? Oh, cheers.
Yeah.
For an unknown reason, Paige's vehicle went through a chain link fence and ran into an embankment on the street's north shoulder at about 1:40 p.m. That's all I could see on my laptop.
I know what happened.
Whoa, that's like way too similar to like Jessica Jones.
I was gonna say, yeah. I know what happened. I know what happened. She threw his Game Boy.
There's another paragraph I have here. Vermont Highway Patrol found Paige dead at the scene. His body was taken to Windler Medical Center, where he's pronounced dead on arrival. The young man's death, as well as the cause of the accident, remains under investigation. And then, like, right at the bottom, which is sort of out of focus, and you're like, and I'm just assuming that, you know, the director was like, yeah, make sure that's not in focus. The next sentence starts off with, like, a little old man with a gray something and a black frock coat limped out and blah, 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 blah. Like, I'm like, what does that have to do with anything? Just a little old man with a black frock coat.
It was Stan Lee's appearance in the episode.
Oh, my gosh. Stan Lee killed Karen's
brother. Yeah.
Despite the best efforts of the paramedics, the Game Boy could not be revived.
What do you guys think about this? Like, because Karen's reaction to it, I mean, I'm assuming she's in some way responsible for this death, or, yeah. You know, I don't know how.
But... I'm going with Matt's theory. Maybe. Too much Game Boy.
Maybe he was the car that was carrying the chemicals that ran into Matt. And caused his accident as well. Although that would be a long way to drive from Vermont to New York to deliver some chemicals.
Yeah, to me, I'm just like, it could have been part of it or a reason for the accident. But who knows, because she just seems like someone who would just be, like, she would just feel guilty even if she didn't have anything to do with it anyway. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I don't know. I would like to know what the story is. About her brother, considering Ben thought it was important enough to keep as part of the file about her.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And
I have to stop researching these Vermont, fake Vermont things, because some kind of things. By the way, it was Interstate 89. I was wrong. Interstate 89 is a real thing. Faking Corners is not. Windler County is not. I was like, this does not sound familiar at all.
Faking Corners made me smile because it sounded like out of Dickens, you know, like Fagin.
Well, I looked
just
up.
Imagine that's
corners.
Where all the little orphans live, going, consider yourself at home.
Fagin Corners flagged something in the Marvel wiki that I don't know if it has something to do with the comics, so I don't know if it's something to do with what's coming. So
shall I have a look?
I stopped there.
I'm going to have a look now. Hang on. Please hold.
Would you like the link?
Sure.
All right,
there
nobody
we go.
Else click this.
Faking Corners Marvel Cinematic Universe comes up with something, but that will just be in Daredevil. Marvel Database. Ah, okay.
So I don't know what that's all about, but yeah.
Oh, I know what this is. Yeah, that's fine. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. So okay. We have to wait for Easter eggs, wink, wink.
Yes.
Okay. So the bit of this scene that made me kind of like, oh, was... the way Karen reacted when she found out that Ben was aware of that. Like, yeah. That made me quite sad, even though she killed him, you know. She did.
She totally murdered him.
So Frank and Fisk meet up again.
Frank
and Fisk. <That's
correct>. You mean Frank and Fisk monster, right?
Come Frank on. And Fisk monster, yeah. Dr. Frank and Fisker. Like, oh my god, imagine how amazing Vincent D'Onofrio would be at playing Dr. Frankenfurter. I just actually paused for a moment to think about that. I was like, oh, that'd be so amazing.
I don't want to see him in that outfit.
Just a sweet Wilson Fiske.
You didn't want to see Tim Curry either, but you ended up enjoying it, man. Yeah. Shut up.
I've said it before and I say it again, Tim Curry as Dr. Frankenfurter was my sexual awakening, I think, as a teen. Because, oh my. So Fisk tells Frank the new plan, which is to set him free. And Frank headbutts Fisk. I was like, oh, ouch. And that must hurt.
I was surprised the guards didn't come to his aid immediately, because he didn't even ward them off. He just started fighting Frank.
It's like
they just started fighting each other.
Him. Yeah. But he's like mad on Frank.
Yeah, but I mean, like, if those guys are his bodyguards, they're the worst bodyguards, because he gets in a fight and he doesn't tell them to not help him, but they just don't help him.
They're just like,
yeah.
We'll see how this goes.
Yeah.
I love how Daredevil has the finishing move, and we see Wilson Fisk's finishing move in here too.
It's always the Monkey Pound.
Yes,
the Donkey Kong.
Yeah, he's basically Donkey Kong.
Hey, he just wants a barrel. He just wants to throw a barrel at him.
Yeah. Aww.
Now I want to see him riding a rhino too.
A spider with sneakers.
Yeah, that too.
He could go up against Peter Parker, spider with sneakers.
Spider-Man versus Kingpin on a spider with sneakers.
Oh, so Fisk basically says to Frank, hey, I want you to kill all the baddies outside, so none of them will get strong apart from me, and then I can rule the world. So,
and I love it too, because it's like he's saying like yeah, sure, you don't want to work for me or anything, but you're still going to work for me,
because yeah,
you can't avoid not doing what you want to do.
Yeah, I love it. And I really like the fact that, I think I mentioned it before, this kind of is, this season is like the Punisher's origin story. It's like Daredevil's origin story in season one. You know, this is the Punisher's origin story. He's slowly becoming, like, the Kingpin's setting him up here to fight all these other people, or to kill all these other people outside. I don't know. It just feels like he's becoming the Frank Castle from the comics, and it's very cool.
I'm sorry. This reminds me of something that's slightly off topic, but it's related.
Topic as Donkey Kong?
I guess it's more. It is definitely more on topic than Donkey Kong. You know, I was just thinking, like, oh yeah, that, in a way, that's cool that this is Frank's origin. But then again, you know, it sucks that we pull away from the main character in the second season. And then I remembered this news flash that was, I think you posted it in the Facebook page about Jessica Jones season two.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, Jessica Jones season one was her origin. Now we're going to explore and have separate plot lines with the supporting characters. That's what they're planning to do on season two and their planning process. And I'm kind of like, awesome.
We're going to reveal Malcolm's origin when he becomes Q-tip man.
Yay. We have to get a Robin episode, I'm just saying.
Well, the guys at Defenders TV podcast think that Robin's going to become Typhoid Mary.
Oh.
I don't think so.
Oh my god. That would be amazing.
I don't know.
And her and Matt fall in love.
Yeah, Matt falls in love with everyone. It's Matt. That's what he does. Frank says, I'm going to kill you next time I see you. And Fisk is like, yeah, whatever. Or I'll kill you.
We'll whatever, see. I'll monkey pound you to death.
Yeah. Meanwhile...
Who do you guys think would win, though, if they came down to fight?
Oh, Fisk.
Fisk, yeah. You think so?
Yeah. Close quarters, no weapons.
Hand to
Fisk.
Hand, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you say post-coitus? What?
What?
Close quarters, not post-coitus. Close quarters, hand to hand.
That's you, Fisk.
I just had a wonderful night with Vanessa. Fisk, now I'm ready.
Fisk would sleep with Frank, and he would sex him to death.
Whoa.
Oh my god.
Sorry. Elvis.
No, Frank's dreaded scissor attack. No.
Death by snoo snoo.
I think if there was weapons involved, Frank would win.
Oh yeah, if there's weapons involved, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, Wilson Fisk seemed impressed that he took out the entire hallway of guys. I don't think he even thought he could do it himself.
Mm.
So I think Punisher could beat him. I mean, he only lost here because he was in chains.
Yeah, Frank seems to be able to take a beating and still kind of get up from it and keep going.
Yeah.
Like, he seemed ready to fight some more after he got pounded.
He must have had, like, 28 broken ribs.
That he was chained up. That was kind of a... wussy way to do it there, Fisk.
There was also a tiny little chain. I don't know why. I was just like, it's a little chain. I don't know why, because obviously yeah, it would hold you still, but it was tiny. It was like a little one that you'd
like a necklace.
Chihuahua on.
He was basically yeah. wearing a necklace around his ankle.
An ankle necklace. Yeah.
I thought Kingpin's opening move in that fight was pretty funny. It looked like he was trying to like make a windmill with his arms. He like swung one arm across his face, then the other, then back the other way.
Maybe he was playing some awesome air guitar windmills. He's doing like an air guitar solo.
He was
punching people.
So meanwhile, back at the farm, Daredevil finds out what they're farming. They have a giant urn of blood. Which is like, oh, and it's blood that's being siphoned from people in cages. And then he gets attacked by a ninja.
That stupid screen cap site, I didn't want to say anything.
Stop going to the screen cap site, Robin.
It's a perfect close up on Nobu's face. I was like,
Well, I will tell you how I was spoiled on it. Well, so I'll tell you.
Peter told you.
So this is where Stan finds his son Daniel, and all the people are in cages, and they just look like crap. So they release the people from the cages, and yeah, we get ninja attack. And when did you guys realize that this was Nobu? Like, for not Robin, obviously.
Immediately.
When he dropped the weapon.
Then you see the weapon. I can't remember what that weapon's called.
Some sort of
scorpion's weapon.
It's got a particular name. It's got a particular name, but I can't. I'm sure, like, it was mentioned somewhere. Yeah, that's pretty much. I mean, I kind of knew. Because one of the dumb things about the trailer is they show a ninja in the trailer saying a line with the mask on, and everyone who watched the trailer went, that's Peter Shinkoda. That's Nobu. And I really wish they hadn't, because then it would have been a surprise. Mm. But because of that, everyone was like, oh my god, like, Nobu's coming back, awesome.
I bet he's only back because you lobbied so hard, Claire.
Yeah, it's just me. Well, remember when we spoke to Peter Shinkoda in season one, Matt, and we said, you know,
yeah,
he was burnt to death, but the hand can bring people back.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was all down to us. Fisk visits Dutton in the infirmary and basically sits there to eat his dinner and watch Dutton die. It's nice of him. Dutton's like, meanwhile, the SWAT team leaves the prison, and Frank is disguised as one of them. It's that old chestnut, which I love. I love that in things where they're like, you see a team of firemen or whatever leave, and then you're like, one of them's actually this person. What a twist. It's always enjoyable. So in the last scene, Daredevil is fighting the ninja, who is very, very fast, and we see a familiar-looking weapon. And then the ninja moves the urn away and completely beats Daredevil, and then reveals that he is Bernie Face Nobu.
He pulls his mask off, and Daredevil says, hey, you're dead. And I'm like, you're blind! You're blind! Why does this guy keep happening?
He knows it's Nobu, though, because of the fighting. Like, only one person has beaten him, and that's Nobu.
It's just the timing of when he pulls.
Yeah, he sees him.
Like, Daredevil's conscious of the audience watching. Like, they don't know it's Nobu yet, but I know. But I'll wait to acknowledge that until everybody else can see.
Have you caught up, audience? You caught up? Okay. So that was the episode, guys.
Yay.
Cool. I hope you enjoyed.
Yep.
I did very much.
Yeah. Something else you might enjoy is a couple of little Easter eggs I have for you. Feeling hungry, Tammy?
Very starving. Ravenous.
You have to have all your strength, because I know you're podcasting straight after this.
Yep.
Okay, so Fisk's lawyer, Benjamin Donovan, he was created by Steve Englehart and Billy Graham in 1973 in the pages of Luke Cage, Hero for Hire. But in the comics, he is much bigger and kind of super strong. He's basically like a gigantic black kingpin, pretty much. In the picture they posted of him, he's got like knuckle dusters on and he's fighting Daredevil, I think. They posted a photo of him. The Japanese characters on the vat of blood, stand for what?
I'm glad you know this. I was like, oh, I wish I could read that.
They stand for rebirth or resurrection.
Reba or resurrection?
Rebirth, not Reba. Oh. Not like the country singer Reba, whatever her name is.
Yeah. McIntyre.
Reba McIntyre.
Yeah, I play a lot of songs on the farm.
Oh, my God. Oh, the farm. I would love it if they ran down there and instead of like people in cages, it's just rows and rows of carrots. Daredevil just shrugs and then it just goes.
Oops.
Oh, and the last Easter egg is in the newspaper article about Karen Page. Her brother's name is Kevin Paxton Page. Paxton Page is actually the name of Karen's father, who was also known as the villain Death's Head. This is in the comics. Karen's mother is Penelope Page. There was no brother. And Karen...
Because
he was dead. And Karen grew up in Fagin's Corner. Mm. So there we go. So that's what Fagin's Corner came from. On the Wikipedia, on the wiki page, it also says other residents include Paxton's butler, Garth, and then my favourite named character, Old Pop Arkham. Old nice. Pop Arkham. I'm like, is this a DC Marvel crossover? Is he like the guy who opened Arkham Asylum? It was me, Old Pop Arkham.
Oh, Pop, we're going to retire you in the Marvel Universe up in Vermont.
Oh, so yeah. That's your Easter eggs for the week, guys. You nice and full?
It was delightful.
Well, in that case, it's time for some quotes, and I'm going to go to the terrific Tammy first.
Yes, it will just be Wilson Fisk talking to his lawyer.
Vanessa.
He did this weird grunt thing afterward. It was so disturbing.
Oh, Matt, do you want to go next?
I didn't write any.
I didn't have that many for this episode, actually. Mel?
This ship is the best I can offer. Oh, yeah. Something tells me make do.
That's a good impression.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was great. Oh, that was really good. Robin.
It's just like Wilson Fisk like just invaded my body for a moment there.
It's a bit like me at the moment earlier.
We're all collecting Fisk quotes. Mine is the physician says that your condition is grave, that your lungs are filling with liquid. In a few hours, you're likely to suffocate in your own blood, but you won't suffer alone. I'll be here because you were right. In prison, there's only room for one kingpin.
Nice.
So no one can hear you scream.
Now listen to my food slopping noises as you fall from this world.
Gross.
I have a quote from between Dutton and Frank, and it involves a sound effect, which I will try and do the best I can. And it goes like this. This crusade of yours, it's never going to end, right? Stab! That's my sound effect. Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Stab.
That was my stab sound effect. Stab, stab. I don't know if I have any more. Does anyone else have any more?
Yeah.
Oh, I have one more.
Okay.
This is a Foggy quote, which is... You don't get to create danger and then protect us from that danger. That's not heroic. I was like, yay, Foggy.
Yep.
That's great.
I actually had the same quote, but I wrote my own follow-up, and it's actually courtesy of Walter White. I am the danger. I am the one who knocks.
It's the danger. The danger of Hell's Kitchen.
I hated that quote, though, from Foggy. I was just like, He didn't create the danger. Shut up.
I love it because it... I like it because it kind of tied in with Civil War, in my opinion. The whole discussion in Civil War is the fact that there are now superpowered people means that people rise up to fight those people. So it's not... it's which isn't true necessarily in Daredevil's case, but it's the whole thing of... you have this guy who's clearing Hell's Kitchen, so it's going to attract the attention of people going up against him. You know, it's just like I don't necessarily agree with it, but I think part of it is true. And from Foggy's perspective, as soon as Matt became Daredevil, it's just trouble has followed them everywhere because now Elektra's turning out. There's ninjas running all over the place. You know. It's
just like, you know, like don't create any rules that will help us and protect us because they might you might upset the crazy people.
I don't know. I'm kind of with Foggy on part of it. And I love Matt, but I'm like, yeah, Matt does create a lot of danger. He is the danger. Right. Well, now it's time to do some feedback, guys. Are you ready?
Sure.
Yeah. We have one very short piece of feedback from Nutty, which is entitled Lost Feedback. It says, hate Locke because he speaks a load of crap, but I love Sawyer, he's super hot. No, it doesn't say that. It says, so the podcast has passed me in viewing of the show, so until I get caught up, I won't be able to send in feedback. Sad face. Aww. We forgive you, Nutty, it's fine.
I don't. take it up to me.
We have an email from Sedna. I am just copying it for you, Melanie. Nothing from Heidi this week. Heidi, what's going on?
I already used up my voice on Wilson Fisk, though.
Ooh, who wants to do a... Actually, we do have one from Heidi. We do have Heidi, sorry. I just threw you under the bus, Heidi.
I'll do Heidi's. But this is
Sedna's email, and it is entitled, I'm Sedna, and I think I've reached rock bottom.
Oh, no. It's just getting worse and worse every week. All right. Elektra's got a team of cleaners. Of course she has. How the other half live, eh? Couldn't they lift Matt into bed instead of leaving him to recover from ninja poison on the floor? Yeah, they could. Even though she saved him, he's changed his mind about her again. Did he really think he could change her? Oh, FFS, Matt, what are you doing? What is FFS?
For fuck's sake.
Oh, and I am not the times.
You're not hip and cool.
I'm not. I'm not with it.
I like the idea of Chase cleaning services. I'm like, oh man, I really specialize in blood, but gosh, you made a mess here.
And then there's a quote: "You don't get to create danger and then protect us from that danger." We were just talking about that, Sedna.
Yeah.
And then she says, "WTF, Foggy?" Even though it's a load of bollocks, Matt didn't create the hand. Oh, don't prolong the agony. I can't bear it, avocados at fucking loggerheads. Don't apologize for who you are. Just fuck off all your friends and allies and go get yourself killed. Why don't you? Like season one, episode 8. This is a Fisk heavy episode.
Hey, that's a fat joke.
I don't know if she meant it that way.
Wow.
She says, nothing wrong with that, D'Onofrio is amazing, etc. Except if you're like me and you live for Matt Murdock, who may have reached peak asshole right here. You can't do this to me, I don't like it, I don't like it.
I think you reached peak clarity. I'm very much behind Matt here in this episode.
So Punisher will whack prison daddy Sean Ryder lookalike, Cockeye from Once Upon a Time in America, for Fisk, who'll break him out. Then Fisk can be Kingpin. Hey! And runs things like genial hairy grout in porridge.
You guys probably don't get that reference.
No, not at all.
Porridge is like an old comedy sitcom about with Ronnie Barker like running things in this prison. But in a funny way.
So is it like a hot show or like a cold show or is it just right?
It's just a tepid show.
Okay.
A bit of jam on top.
How can Karen just waltz into a journalism job like that so conveniently just after her old job fizzles away? And why would they seriously have mothballed Ben's office? When she broke down crying, I first thought it was through remorse that she'd indirectly caused Ben's death. But then they showed the file about her brother. Oh, what else has Karen got to be guilty about?
Game Boys.
Ugh, the farm. Way to discourage blood donation, people.
That's exactly how they do blood donation. Every time I've done it, they put me in a cage and hook me up to a ninja machine.
Do they still give you a cookie at the end, though?
Yeah. That's homegrown on the farm, on the cookie tree.
At least those people get a cookie at the end, I guess. Now Fisk's eating dinner as Dutton carks it. If you didn't lose your lunch before, wretch. Oh, it's Zombie Nobu and his hook knife chain disemboweler thingy. Surprise! Not for fuck's sake. See, I learned, said no.
I'm assuming she means that we weren't surprised that Nobu turned up in it, like, because they put it in the trailer.
Yeah.
Damn it. Thank you, Sedna.
Oh, I see. I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
In the trailer!
I should have read that differently.
Don't worry.
Whatever.
Thank you, Sedna, as always. We hope you haven't, or you have reached rock bottom and it's all up from here, because, you know, for you. Matt has reached peak arsehole, hopefully. But we'll see next week.
Yeah, man. Good
yeah,
job.
Yeah.
Stop peeking at my asshole.
Hey!
Oh, man. Oh, okay. So, who wants to read Heidi's? Robin, did you say you wanted to?
Sure. Hey, guys! My prediction based on the title is Matt and Elektra go to a college party and flashbacks and play games like Spin the Bottle. Oh, wait, that was a really bad Buffy episode. Never mind. Hey,
which episode was that?
Well, there's a
there's an angel one.
Maybe she's thinking of Where the Wild Things Are.
Oh yeah, that is a terrible episode.
Can we have a whole Wilson Fisk in prison series?
Yes.
These writers just want to tear my heart from my chest and stomp on it. First Matt and Karen, now Matt and Foggy. Cry face. Fisk is very crafty, getting Frank to do his dirty work. I guess Frank got what he wanted to, though. Wow. Frank taking down 10 other inmates was seriously brutal. I'm really glad they mentioned Ben. It seemed like Karen was just going to have the same storyline all over again, so I'm really glad they reminded us and her of what happened last season. Fisk definitely hasn't lost his edge. Seeing him and Frank fighting each other was crazy good. Fisk is ultimately the kingpin of prison. Good for him.
Well done, Wilson.
Every time they cut to Matt, I just wanted to get back to Fisk and Castle. That was a really great story. Until next time, Heidi. Hey guys, my prediction based on you pasted it twice.
Thanks, Heidi.
Three times or four times? Oh my god.
Well, I tried to paste it. I kept trying to paste it and it wouldn't. So then Skype obviously went, here, have it 10,000 times. And also, I have to say, Heidi, I know it must have been painful having to type the word castle in that email a few times.
Aww.
Because Castle has now been cancelled, the show. Yeah. Castle, and Heidi does Castle Cast. So thank you for doing that.
All the shows.
Wasn't that show like way, didn't it stay over its welcome or whatever? Or is that Bones?
I think both of them.
Yeah,
both of them.
And Bones is still going on, as far as I know.
Yeah.
If anybody's talked to Heidi about Castle, it might actually be a good thing.
Yeah. She hasn't been excited about it, so.
I've never seen an episode in my life. But from what I understand, they got rid of one of the two leads, and when you get rid of one of the leads, the show usually goes downhill, so. That's my understanding. I don't know. So I don't know what they're going to do after next week when Matt Murdock actually leaves the Daredevil the show. Sorry, I shouldn't have said that. Right, anyway, let's get on with scores. Robin, you can actually go first because obviously you have to go soon.
Yeah. I really dug this episode. It was probably one of my favorites. I don't see any reason other to give it a 10. 10 out of 10 Game Boy accidents.
Wow. So your favorite of this series so far?
I looked at my other nines and there was nothing to complain about here. I thought everybody was talking good, and you know, Karen got upgraded to, you know, news reporter. Well, that's, you could complain about that, or you could just go, what the fuck ever. I've been going along with everything else so far. So
what about Matt continuing to be a jerk?
I think Matt's being realistic. So I'm behind Matt.
You're Civil actually War. Ahead of Matt, because Matt's going to do his score in a minute, Robin. So, Tammy, as our lovely guest, you can go next.
Thanks. I love this episode. There are three episodes that I would give a 10 to. This is one of them, so I'm giving this a 10 out of 10 donkey fists.
Wow. Melanie.
Hey. I felt like this episode, like, a lot happened, but then, like, still felt like not much happened at the same time. I don't know if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, it just felt like, I don't know.
Like, moving the big story along?
Maybe. It just felt maybe like it was just kind of like a bridge episode, maybe, or something that goes into, like, the bigger piece of the story. So to me, it didn't seem as exciting as you guys seem to think it is. I'm not sure why I don't feel the same way. But anyways,
after your review of Civil War, I don't understand anything you say anymore. So.
If we all felt the same way, Mel, it would be very boring.
Yeah. So boring. So I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10 fruit knives.
I forgot about the pineapple. Oh. Matt.
I kind of agree with Mel. I didn't.
You're not supposed to agree with me.
I didn't love all the stuff with the Daredevil team, basically. I didn't like Matt's stuff and Karen's stuff. Foggy,
it just felt
Foggy
like
was
not
okay.
Much happened with their storylines.
Mm. Yeah. But the Punisher and Kingpin thing was great. That was very entertaining, violent, and it boosted my score up a lot. I'll give it 8 out of 10 ninja blood drives.
I enjoyed this episode. I think I'm kind of between team Tammy and team Mel. in that I wasn't that interested in the stuff with Karen. I liked some of the stuff with Matt. I love that we get the return of Nobu. That was really cool. I love, love, love all the stuff with Punisher and Kingpin. But I thought that was fantastic. Like Mel said, like Tammy said, I didn't realize like how much I missed the Kingpin being in the show until he came back. And I'm just like, oh, he's so good. I love all the stuff of him in the prison. I agree with Heidi that I want a little spin-off of just Fisk in the prison. There didn't seem to be that much happening with like the you know, team Murdoch. So I'm going to the prison stuff does push it up. So I am going to give it an 8 out of 10, and I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. Return of Nobu. It is Return of Nobu. Come on.
Okay, that's an average of 8.6, and I hope you guys have a great week. See you next week.
Thank you, Robin.
Good to talk to you again, Tammy.
Nice to talk to you too, Robin.
Bye.
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 Okay,
so now it is time to thank our lovely guest, Tammy Tam Tam, for coming on the podcast this week. Thank you, Tammy Tam Tam.
Hey.
Tammy what? And to ask, if people would like to hear more of your lovely dulcet tones, where can they find you on the interwebs?
Or my laugh that people complain about? Sure.
Oh, no. I'm going to stand up for this. I want to say, I did a tweet about 3 years ago in which I said, some of the people that I follow on Twitter who have the most infectious laughs, and it included both Tammy and Mel. Sorry, Matt, you didn't make it, but neither did I.
Oh.
Yeah.
What's wrong?
Tammy, we should combine our laughs so we can make one ultimate powerful laugh. God.
I think you guys would take over the world with your laughs.
What's wrong with my laugh? Listen to me laugh.
I love you. your laugh, Matt, but it's just mine and your laughs do not, and they're not up to scratch, I'm afraid. They're not as infectious as Mel and Tammy's laugh. The listeners will have to tell me what they think. I don't know.
They're not as full-bodied and hearty.
It's the same thing with Alex's laugh on Ramjack. It just makes me laugh, like, every time. So, Tammy, where can people hear you?
So you can hear me on Intro to X.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
That is just... I feel like we're never going to end, but we're in season 9! Yay!
Two more seasons to go!
And a movie.
And a movie. And then another season if it ever comes back again. Please don't, X-Files.
You really shouldn't. Believe me.
If any listeners are very precious about the X-Files, don't listen to our podcast.
Or listen to us and hate us. Whatever.
We don't mind. And you're not doing any other podcasts at the moment?
No, not actively, no.
Yeah, you're just popping up all over the place.
Yeah.
Like a little whack-a-mole right of podcasting.
She's not actively doing podcasts. Sometimes she does them in her sleep without her knowledge.
Wow.
If Claire can win in her sleep, then I can podcast in my sleep.
Absolutely. Awesome. And I should say, Matt and Mel, have you been up to anything this week you would like to plug?
Matt, you did your game podcast.
Yes, Matt is wrong about games. Video game podcast.
What are you guys covering at the moment?
It's just all the news that's fit to cover every week.
Ooh.
Usually nothing, it's not the same topic every week, so it's always different. Just the games industry in general, what's been going on in the news, what's new that we're playing and stuff.
This is my very limited game knowledge. The big new release at the moment is Uncharted 4?
4.
Okay. No more than me, Claire.
Uncharted 4 is because I know a lot of people want there to be a movie and like for someone to play the main guy in it because he's super hot or something.
There already is a movie. It's called Indiana Jones.
Oh, okay. I'm with you. And I haven't got anything to mention apart from two things, actually. I'm going to add a random fact. People who follow my personal Facebook, although I will post it in the podcast group, I bought the ugliest little Daredevil plush 2 days ago. you guys should all go and buy one if you see it, because it is the ugliest little Daredevil plush, and oh, how I love it. As soon as I saw it, I was like, this has to be mine. It's the most adorably ugly thing I've ever seen. I will post a photo in the Facebook Facebook group so people can see it as well. But also, in more exciting news, a few days ago, I was lucky enough to interview McCaleb Burnett, who played Grotto in season 2 of Daredevil. He was absolutely awesome. He was such a lovely guy. We discussed the character of Grotto. We talked a bit about the security that Marvel have around keeping details of their project secret, which was quite interesting. We spoke a little bit about the filming of The Revenant, the Oscar-winning film from last year, which he was also in. It was just a really nice chat. He was actually walking around the park while I spoke to him. Really, really lovely guy. Please give it a listen. That's all I have to plug this week. But that's up on the feed. It's the most recent episode that's come out. So now, guys, it's time to predict what next week's episode will be about. You guys ready?
Mm-hmm.
Put your hands on the buzzers or something. Next week's episode is called The Man in the Box.
Oh.
It's your dad in a box, John.
It's gonna...
Is it like one of those game shows where you have to choose between the prize and the mystery box?
Mm. And you win a prize and they're like, you've won a man! Oh.
And a box. It's gonna be that sarcophagus or whatever that thing was that they brought down the elevator at the end of the episode.
It was a thing full of blood.
There was something in it. There was like a dude in it.
It was a blood man.
I think when I discussed it with Peter Shinkoda on Facebook, I referred to it as Nobu's giant cookie jar of blood or something. Because it looked like a big cookie jar, but it was full of blood. Yeah. So who do you think's going to be in
it's
there, though?
They all go and do an Alice in Chains concert, and then it's just... they just have a good time. They all... Well, I guess maybe Alice in Chains covers, since they're like half of them are dead or something. But
they just go there for some downtime.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because after such a heavy episode, they all need some downtime.
But could it's the man gonna... in the box refer to Fisk? Because he's a man and he's kind of in a box, like in his little cell.
Maybe.
Mm.
It'll just
refer
be dark.
To Jack Murdock, because Jack Murdock is a man. He's in a box, a.k.a. a coffin.
It's going to be Darla?
It's going to be Darla. No, she's not a man.
No, she's not a man.
No, she's a vampire.
Which you'll have to see. Yeah, they're going to introduce vampires to the
Maybe NPCs. It is a vampire. If it's a sarcophagus full of blood, that's how they keep being the vampire.
Ninja vampire man.
Yeah! Guys, come on.
They're bringing Dracula back.
It's going to be Morbius.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
No, it's going to be a Boxing Hell in a sequel.
Ooh! Okay. The film by Jennifer Lynch.
Yeah.
Which is amazingly bad, and I love it. Okay, well, that's the end of the episode. We'll have to wait, obviously, until next week to find out if any of those predictions are true. In the meantime, Tammy, would you like to take us out with an Excelsior or a quote of a random quote of your choice?
Excelsior.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. You can comment and send feedback to us by emailing defenderspod@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/defenderspodcast or on Twitter at defenderspod. Defenders Podcast is created under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives, 3.0 Unported International License. That means you can share it, you can send it to your friends, you just can't make any money off of it. You can't change it, and you have to link back to us and our site. Excelsior!